Today we'd like to see the title of prophecies in the first year of Darius in Daniel chapter 11 verses 1-45. To the souls on this online world through the podcast or our YouTube channel on the earth, we'd like to suggest three expositional questions. Right here is the music video, Maranatha Worship Songs videos, click on. Also, CCM videos, a minister of CCH Press, music videos, right hand side, click on. So far, four music videos published. Question one. In verses 6-7, and at the end of some years, they shall join forces. For the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement, but she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. But from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army unto the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them, and prevail. What do these mean? And what can we learn from here? Question 2. In verses 33-34, and those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by sword, and flame by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. What do these mean, and what can we learn from here? In verse 45, and he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. What does it mean, and how can we apply it to our lives? The prophecy of chapter 8, Daniel, right here is Alexander. Four generals to come out after Alexander the Great death in 323 before Christ. Right here, the map. The top is Cassander, then Antigo, then right-hand side Seleucid and Ptolemy. Four generals come out, so then it will be changed in history. Then here, Daniel chapters in the world of history is right here, 331 before Christ, Greece conquered Judah. That time, four generals come out. But today's chapter is basic number 3, Ptolemy, King Seleucus, the king, come out. But chapter 11 said Ptolemy, you know, the south kingdom, Seleucus, relative north kingdom, two of them, basically, who was going to conquer Palestine area, you know. That one. In the last time in Daniel chapter 10, 20, 21, then he said, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince. The one like appearance of a man who may be either an angel or Jesus Christ told Daniel that both the Persia and Greece were against God's people, being represented by each prince or devil. But our Lord is in control of the past, present, and future, and all events, including the events of Michael's matter, are recorded in the scriptures, which is true. And so we find that an angel that came to Daniel in chapter 10 is continuing his message to Daniel in this 11th chapter. Isaiah 46, 9 to 10, remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. And so it is how God proves that he is eternal, outside of the time continuum. From ancient times, he can tell you the things that are going to happen. And Daniel, the 11th chapter, has to be one of the classic examples of this very true. How that the eternal God revealed unto Daniel the things that were going to happen in the future and declared them with great accuracy. This chapter 12 can be divided as follows. Verses 120 shows the conflict between Ptolemies and Seleucid over control of Palestine in 3200 before Christ. Verse 21-35 describes the persecution of Israel under Antiochus IV Epiphanes, the 8th king, Seleucus kingdom, or northern kingdom. Verse 36-45, the prophet shift to the end times. Antiochus IV faces from view, and the Antichrist of the last day becomes the center of attention. So we may see captivity return on the book of Ezra. Basically, it's world history right there. Here, pseudo-Semitic meaning. Pseudo-Semitic claimed the Persian throne by pretending to Semites, who had secretly been murdered, ruling for several months. So that is called where pseudo-Semitic. Here, verse 1, also in the first year of Jairus the Mede, the first, even I stood up, confirmed, and strengthened him. Jairus, 536 before Christ, was a good friend of Daniel. He believed in the God of Daniel. He told Daniel, your God will be able to deliver you from the mouth of the lions. He encouraged him. And so the angel declares that he was there to strengthen and to confirm Darius the king, Daniel 6:20. And now I will tell you the truth, about the captivity in terms of Regia table. Verse 2, and now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will rise in Persia, and the first shall be far richer than them all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against Laom of Greece. In the historical history of a captive return, as chronicles in the book of Ezra, King Cyrus' reign was succeeded by three monarchs, Cambyses 530-52. You may see above table, followed by Pseudo-Semites and then Darius. The first king in the lineage was Xerxes, right here, first king. Xerxes, right there. Xerxes is identified as Ahasuerus from biblical account 486-465 before Christ. Famously known as Esther's husband, he amassed substantial wealth, an enormous army estimated to be over a million strong. In 480 before Christ, Xerxes launched a military campaign against Greece, But this ambitious expedition ultimately resulted in catastrophic defeat rather than a victory. So that one is talking about that. Verse 3, then a mighty king shall arise who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Persia was defeated by Greece under Alexander the Great in 301 before Christ, who conquered most of the Mediterranean and Middle Eastern land until his death in 323 before Christ. And when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up, divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others beside these. His kingdom, the Grecian kingdom, was then divided two, four generals, Cassander, Antigonus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. Verse 5, also the king of the south shall become strong as well as one of his princes, and he shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. The biblical narrative, especially within prophecy, focuses on only two of four empires that emerged after Alexander the Great death. The Ptolemaic kingdom referred to as the south, governing Egypt, surrounding territories, and Seleucus empire called the north, controlling Syria, regions to the east. Through geography, north relatively to Ptolemaic kingdom. These two empires, despite their broader locations, are highlighted due to their significant historical interaction and influence on the land of Israel, which lay between them. Verses 6 to 7, and at the end of some years they shall join forces, for the daughter of the kingdom of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement, but she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begat her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. But from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. Many years after these prophecies were made, historical events unfolded between the Seleucid Empire, Syria, the north, and the Ptolemaic Kingdom, Egypt, the south. In 252 before Christ, Ptolemy II of Egypt arranged a marriage between his daughter Berenice, and Antiochus II of Syria. This alliance was intended to solidify a peace treaty between their two nations. However, this peace was short-lived. Berenice was later murdered in Antioch, likely at the instigation of Antiochus II's former wife, Laodice. In response to his sister's death, Ptolemy III, who had by then ascended to the Egyptian throne, launched a war against Seleucid to avenge her murder. Verse 8, and he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt with their princes and their precious articles of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. So when he had conquered of the northern kingdom, Jerome tells us that he took back 40,000 talents of silver, 2,500 idols, as he sought of sacred treasury of the northern kingdom, And as he said, they will take back their gods and vessels of silver and gold. Verses 9 to 18, right here is introduction. And the king of the north shall come to the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. The passage describes the shifting power dynamics between the Seleucid Empire, the north, led by King Seleucus II, though it noted the text mighty referring to Antioch III, the Great, and the Ptolemaic Kingdom, the south. Under Ptolemy IV, the king of the north, likely Antiochus III, achieved significant military success, conquering many Egyptian cities, verse 15, and establishing control of Israel, referred to as the glorious land, verse 18. However, his expansion was eventually halted when he suffered a decisive defeat at the hands of the Romans at the Battle of Magnesia. That's a background you see. That is up to 18 we see. However, his sons shall stir up strife and assemble multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come overwhelmed and pass through. Then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. And the king of the south shall be moved with rage and go out and fight with him, with the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into the hands of his enemy. When he has taken away multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail. For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with great army and much equipment. Now in those times many shall rise up against the king of the south, also violent upon of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a city mount, and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist, but he who comes against him shall do according to his own will, and no one shall stand against him. He shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his power. So conquers Jerusalem and northern kingdom. He shall also set his face to end with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it, but she shall not stand with him or before him. Antiochus III often referred to as the Great. The Seleucid ruler attempted to forge peace between his empire, Syria, the north, and the Ptolemaic kingdom, Egypt, the south. His strategy involved marrying his daughter, Cleopatra I, Syria, to the young Egyptian king, Ptolemy V Epiphanes. However, this diplomatic effort to create a lasting alliance ultimately failed to achieve its desired outcome of stable peace, because Cleopatra, her daughter, deserted the loyalty to her father in the north rather than to her husband in the south. That's why it failed. 1820. After this, he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall take many, but the ruler shall bring the reproach against them to an end. And with the reproach removed, he shall turn back on him. Then he shall turn his face toward the fortress of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. There shall arise in his place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. The passage highlights the stunning accuracy of a biblical prophecy. After the Antiochus III the Great, his son Seleucus IV, Philopater became king. Antiochus had expanded his empire but was defeated by Rome and Magnesia in 190 before Christ. He later died while trying to plunder a temple. Seleucus IV, weighed down by heavy tribute to Rome, raised taxes. He sent his minister Heliodorus to take money from the Jerusalem temple. Soon after, Seleucus died, neither in anger nor in battle. Many believe Heliodorus poisoned him. This fulfilled the prophecy exactly. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of loyalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. Following Seleucus IV, his brother Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, rose to power, notably gaining favor with the Romans. This marked the beginning of the reign of an exceptionally wicked individual described in prophecy as a vile person. Antiochus Epiphanes was historically notorious for his extreme malice and evil. His actions notorious for his extreme malice and evil. His actions characterized by direct opponent to God, blasphemy, were so profound that he is considered the type of the Antichrist. His violence was such that even contemporary Jews speculated he might be the prophesied man of sin. The text suggests that the future Antichrist will replicate the heinous deeds committed by Antiochus IV's Epiphanes. 22. With the force of a flood, they shall be swept away from before him and be broken, and also the prince of the covenant. The phrase, the force of a flood, signified Antiochus IV, Epiphanes' overwhelming military power, which would decisively crush all opposition. The prince of covenant is like a reference to Onias III, the Jewish high priest, who was tragically assassinated in 170 before Christ, and Menelaus, Onias. 23, and after the rigor is made with him, he shall act deceitfully, for he shall come up and become strong with a small number of people. He shall enter peaceably even into the richest place of the province, and he shall do what his fathers have not done, nor his forefathers. He shall disperse among them the plunder, spoil, and riches, and he shall divide his plant against the strongholds, but only for a time. He shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south, with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stood up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for they shall devise plans against him. Yes, those who eat of the portion of his delicates shall destroy him. His army shall be swept away. Many shall fall down slain. 27. Both of these kings' hearts shall be bent on evil, and they shall speak lies at the same table, but they shall not prosper, for the end will still be at the appointed time. The passage suggests that the two treacherous kings in question were likely Antiochus I of Syria, Ptolemy I of Egypt. The authors observes that treachery and deceit are characteristic tools for powerful individuals, power brokers, to gain advantage over others. When two such figures engage in this kind of manipulative struggle for dominance, it inevitably leads to a process of mutual weakening and self-destruction. Ultimately, this prophecy concludes that such efforts are futile because all power truly rests in God's hands. 29:31. At the appointed time he shall return and go toward the south. But it shall not be like the former or the latter, for the ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy. Antiochus IV Epiphanes facing a setback from enemy ships like a Roman intervention. During another invasion of Egypt, who was forced to retreat. On his return journey between 168-167 before Christ, he devastated Jerusalem. He plundered the city, including the temple treasury, and exacted a grave insult. He desecrated the holy temple by sacrificing pigs on the altar dedicated to Zeus, thereby halting the daily Jewish sacrifices. This act was particularly egregious under Jewish law, which considered the pigs unclean, making such a sacrifice the ultimate defilement and an extreme affront to Jewish religious practices. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary of fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifice and place there the abomination, desolation. So 31, 21, 31. 32. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt. Corrupted with flattery, but the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Those who have violated the covenants likely refers to Hellenized Jews who betrayed their faith and collaborated with Antiochus IV. This group possibly include Menelaus, the high priest, who allied with Antiochus against the devout Jews. Conversely, the people who know their God are probably the Maccabees and their supporters who remained loyal to God's covenant and resist Antiochus' persecutions. However, The text also suggests that this phrase might have a broader future fulfillment, implying a continued relevance beyond the Maccabean era. 33-34. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. Those who possess wisdom and share their knowledge with others will harshly endure significant persecution. These challenging times serve as a stark reminder of our human frailties and limitations. As we teach and preach, we must be ready to face both persecution and rejection. 35, and some of those who understanding shall fall, to refine them, to purify them, make them white until time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. 36, then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt, magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall exalt himself above them all. The desires of women would be homosexual or Tammuz, a Babylon fertility god. As highlighted previously, biblical references to the Antichrist consistently emphasize his arrogant speech, blasphemy against God, and self-exaltation. He is known by various titles such as the Son of Perdition, Son of Perdition, the Beast, and could fittingly be called Big Mouth. To his precedent blasphemous pronouncement and self-aggrandizement. The Jews of Jesus' era understood the Messiah to be the Son of God, drawing from the Old Testament prophecies. For instance, Psalm 278 states, "You are my beloved Son. This day have I begotten you. Ask of me, and I will give you the nations for your inheritance." Isaiah 9:6 also refers to the Messiah as a son given. This belief is evident in the high priest questioning of Jesus, where Jesus affirmed his identity as both the Messiah and the Son of God, a claim that resonated with their existing understanding. Interestingly, the Jewish Talmud also records that Jesus was crucified approximately 40 years before the destruction of the temple. This pattern of self-exaltation mirrors Satan's boast in Isaiah 14:13, where he declares, "I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will ascend into the mounts of the congregation on the farthest side of the north. I will be like Most High." Similarly, the Antichrist will reject all other deities, instead magnify himself above every god, embodying a profound self-worship that mirrors Satan's original rebellion. All cross-reference right there. 38, "But in their place he shall honor a god of fortress, and a god which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things." Some interpret the god of fortress as Jupiter or Zeus, suggesting that the king in question will prioritize and worship welfare above all else. 39:40, thus he shall act against strongest fortresses with the foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance his glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and divide the land for gain. And the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him, like a whirlwind, with chariot horsemen, with many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, pass through. Here, prophetic focus shifts Antiochus IV ceases to be a central figure, and the remainder of the book of Daniel concentrates on Antichrist who will appear in the last days. 41:44. He shall also enter glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand: Edom, Moab, and prominent people, Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over the all precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans, Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy any Hellite many. In the book of Revelation, it is prophesied that the Euphrates River will dry up, clearing the way for armies from the east, potentially including forces from nations like China, Pakistan, and India. This immense army, numbering in millions of even hundreds of millions, are expected to cover, to confront, subdue the Western powers. 45, and he shall plant the tents of his palaces between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end. No one will help him. The glorious holy mountain refers to Mount Zion, or more broadly, the city of Jerusalem. It is prophesied that during the battle of Armageddon, at the climax of the great tribulation, Jesus Christ will return with his saints. He will descend upon the Mount of Olives, causing it to cleave into a new vessel valley extending toward the Jordan Valley. Jesus will then supernaturally destroy the Antichrist, not through physical combat, but by the power of his spoken word, like in the sword from his mouth. Despite the Antichrist's immense power and forces, which will lead the people to question who can oppose him, his reign will end with a single command from Christ. This aligns with Martin Luther's sentiment that one little word will fail him, emphasizing that no force can withstand the authoritative word of Jesus. So we covered all three questions. So let's sing all together Maranatha song. Right here, page 9 is a QR code you may see. Also continue to keep on prayer, the mission prayer request. Also, the last page is over there is the Christian music videos, just right there, so you may listen or watch it on video, and you may blessed ritually. May God bless you, everybody. Amen.